Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Down the middle of the field. He's got Cruz. 35, 30.
What if we get no cut? Logan intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants.
And welcome to Wednesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. So glad you could join us with you for the next 60 minutes as we will be breaking down all that is happening with respect to the Giants as well as some other storylines around the NFL. Lance Meadow with you. Two ways for you to interact with us on this program. You give us a ring at 201-939-4513, 201-939-4513. Also on Twitter, you can follow and interact with me directly at Lance Meadow. One word, last name, M-E-D-O-W. Also use the hashtag Giants Chat. So a few things I want to delve into today during the course of the program, and then we'll open it up to phone calls and obviously whatever storylines you want to tackle with respect to the Giants or the NFL playoffs. Everything pretty much is up for the conversation. Yesterday, Odell Beckham Jr., it was announced he won NFL Rookie of the Year as well as NFL Offensive Rookie of the Year from the Pro Football Writers Association. Now, that is not the official NFL Rookie of the Year award. That is going to be announced the night before the Super Bowl. But there are a couple of other accolades in which writers and other experts chime in, and Odell Beckham was at the top of the list. So he won both of those honors, as I mentioned, Rookie of the Year as well as Offensive Rookie of the Year. Defensive Rookie of the Year went to Rams defensive tackle Aaron Donald. And what the Pro Football Writers Association does, it puts together an entire rookie team. A whole unit on offense, a whole unit on defense, as well as special teams. Now, Beckham was the only Giant to make the team. The Rams actually had the most representatives. But you know, overall, aside from Odell Beckham, this was a very impressive rookie class this season, specifically from LSU alone. And I'm sure you've heard a lot of chatter. Odell Beckham, Jarvis Landry, the wide receiver of the Miami Dolphins, as well as Jeremy Hill, the Bengals running back, all three of them played college ball together, and all three of them had a huge impact across the NFL with respect to their own teams this season. But it shows a lot about what Odell Beckham was able to do and the fact that he is tallying one accolade after another. He's going to the Pro Bowl next week, and he's probably in prime position to win Rookie of the Year. I was actually looking over some of the numbers with respect to Beckham compared to the other group. And I'm curious to hear your reaction today during the course of the program. I mean, does anyone threaten Odell Beckham when it comes to who is going to win Rookie of the Year? I would say his biggest challengers are Mike Evans of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, as well as his college teammate who I mentioned, Bengals running back Jeremy Hill. Outside of that, you'd be very hard to find another guy that has made such a significant impact more so than Odell Beckham. Now, Evans is interesting because clearly he tied Beckham with total touchdowns this season, and Tampa Bay's offense really went through him this season more so than Vincent Jackson. Not that Jackson wasn't involved, but there was chemistry built between Josh McCown as well as Mike Evans or even Mike Glennon, depending on who they had under center, and he maintained consistent numbers. Same thing with Jeremy Hill. Jeremy Hill was heavily involved in the offense right from the start. He had more of a role once Giovanni Bernard got hurt at one point, but if you look at what Hill did this season, you look at what Evans did, and then you look at what Beckham did, nobody has been more consistent than Odell Beckham in terms of game-to-game. From the minute he stepped on the field after that hamstring injury, his first game he had four catches and a touchdown against the Atlanta Falcons, if you recall. And then after that, you could pretty much pencil in Odell Beckham for a touchdown or two and at least 90 yards. And you know the numbers because the numbers constantly jump off the page. 90 yards in nine straight games that tied Michael Irvin's record. And then he closed out the season with four straight games with at least 130 receiving yards plus a touchdown. So he was very consistent. Now, part of it, obviously, he was targeted more so than most other rookies. But once again, I would be extremely surprised if Odell Beckham doesn't win Rookie of the Year. And if you go based on what the Pro Football Writers Association voted and how they tallied the votes, that usually seems to indicate where the nation stands with respect to the rookie class. So he's in the driver's seat right now. Other than Mike Evans and Jeremy Hill, who are threats, but they do take a back seat. If there's anybody else who you think could give Odell Beckham a run for the money, feel free to give us a call at 201-939-4513. Hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. You can also follow and interact with me directly at Lance Meadow. One word, last name, M-E-D-O-W. So that was the most notable Giants piece of news yesterday, the fact that Odell Beckham has acquired some additional hardware, and I'm sure he's going to make plenty of noise the rest of this offseason. As I mentioned, you got the Pro Bowl next week, and then you'll have an opportunity to see whether or not he's going to win the official Rookie of the Year award. That'll be announced prior to the Super Bowl the following week after the Pro Bowl. So he will be extremely active, more so than any other Giant, during the course of this offseason. The other thing that was interesting, not necessarily newsworthy in terms of brand new news, but Giants.com is doing a lot of summary and articles to recap the 2014 season. And if you head to our website, you'll see the top five storylines from 2014. And the guys did a really nice job tallying up what they thought were the most prominent storylines from this past season. And I'll open it up to the audience, want to hear from you. You know, what jumps out to you with respect to this season? Who made the biggest impact? What was the biggest turning point with respect to this season? Certainly a lot of things to delve into over the course of 2014. And they put together the top five storylines. These were the top five storylines. Number one, progress of the new offense. And it goes without saying they made strides from 2013 to 2014. And even if you look from game one to game 16, now the offense made significant improvement during the course of this year. And that has to be noted, considering there were a number of injuries, there was movement on the offensive line, the consistency of the running game was not there throughout the course of the season. With all that being said, with all of the obstacles, Eli Manning had a career year in a number of different statistical categories, protected the football much better than he did in the previous season. And over the last four or five games, you know, the offense was consistent. You could pencil in, this is what the offense is going to be able to produce without putting additional pressure on the defense and special teams. And it's even noted in this article, Giants scored at least 24 points in each of their final six games. That was their longest such streak in 51 years. And that's what you'd like to see this group carry over to 2015. And remember, that was one of the things that we had talked about throughout the course of training camp leading into this season. It was going to take some time for this offense to start to build some chemistry and for everything to come to fruition. And that's pretty much exactly how the script was followed during the course of this season. Would they have liked to have seen a little bit more ignition earlier in the year? Absolutely. Tom Coughlin even mentioned that during the course of his postseason presser. But what they were able to put together over the last few games, and regardless of the opponent, we could sit here and break down the schedule top to bottom. You know, there's only so much stock you could put into the schedule, especially when teams have no control over who they play. The NFL, it's a balanced schedule. You know, you get X amount of divisions, X amount of conference opponents, and they're going to come in any typical order. You can't fault the team for who they went up against in the latter stages of the season. It's all about consistency. That, to me, is the best sign of what a team can showcase. Number two on the list was the rise of Odell Beckham Jr., and we talked about that right off the top of the show. The fact that he is now being noted for his accomplishments just goes to show you the impact that Odell Beckham had on this team, on the rookie class. But one of the things that I also noted with John Schmoke, where we did yesterday's two-minute drill, everybody compares what Odell Beckham did compared to the rookie class, and you should certainly take that into consideration. But how about what Odell Beckham's done in comparison to the rest of the league? And when you look at the numbers, this is what Beckham finished up. He was tied for third in touchdowns. This is not just within rookies. This is with everybody. Tied for ninth in receptions, and he was 10th in receiving yards. So we're talking about a player that was in his first year in the NFL, only played 12 games, and still finished in the top 10 in the three major statistical categories when you measure the success of a wide receiver. So that says a lot about what he was able to do in a very small period of time. Now, bringing that back to the rookie class discussion, when you start to evaluate who's in the driver's seat to win Rookie of the Year, keep in mind, Mike Evans played three more games than Odell Beckham Jr. Evans played 15. He missed one game this season. And you look at the comparison of their numbers, Beckham, 91 receptions, Evans, 68. So Beckham had 23 more receptions than Mike Evans. Beckham had over 1,300 receiving yards. Evans had just over 1,000, so there was a 254-yard difference there. And with respect to the touchdowns, they were tied at 12 apiece. So they were neck and neck throughout the course of the season, but Beckham really pulled away in the later stages of the year. Then Jeremy Hill, he played all 16 games. He had 5 100-yard games. So he did make a significant impact with respect to the Bengals' running game. Was also involved as a receiver, but it was sprinkled in. Big game here, then a few quiet games. Plus, he was obviously balancing the load with Giovanni Bernard once Bernard came back healthy. And Evans, in comparison to Beckham, Evans only had 3 100-yard games, and that did include one for 209 yards. So, like I said, the rookie class overall, plenty of players made an impact in year number one. But when you look at Beckham compared to everybody else, 12 games, what he was able to do, nobody can compare in terms of the amount of impact that he was able to showcase throughout the course of the season. Just real quickly, and we'll be getting to your phone calls momentarily, number three that Giants.com put together in terms of the top five storylines, mounting injuries, 22 players on IR, which, you know, every time you look at that number, it's absolutely amazing. And that was the most injuries in the NFL. Has it been a trend with respect to this organization? It has. And even Tom Coughlin mentioned during the course of the offseason, they had put a great deal of time and research into finding ways to maintain health. And what was also interesting, and Tom Coughlin also noted this in his postseason presser, you know, a lot of the injuries that had happened in previous years were hamstring injuries, a pulled muscle here or there. So one of the things, if you recall, that they did during the course of training camp, they were monitoring how hard players were pushing themselves during the course of training camp. And then they'd have periods of time after practices where it would be an opportunity for everybody to cool down. So they made strides in that department. And then what happens this season, you get not the injuries with respect to hamstrings, pulled muscles, and soreness. It was more of ligaments being torn, the more serious nature. And sometimes it's a matter of luck when it comes to injuries. And even Jerry Reese, the GM, pointed that out during the course of his postseason presser. Sometimes injuries is a matter of luck. There's no exact science to it. You could do all the research, all the homework, and it's just a matter of guys being put in precarious situations. You never know where they get hit, and unfortunately, it could strike you at the wrong time. And that's exactly what happened to the Giants. And we've talked about it a great deal of time. The one thing that you can't overlook when you mention injuries, and a lot of people say, well, listen, injuries is a part of the game, and it is. Everybody's in the same boat. Everybody loses a player or two. But when you look at the 22 players that were put on IR this season, and you take into consideration what did that player do or what was he penciled in coming into the season, we're talking about star players who were starting caliber players who were expected to have a great deal of reps, contribute in special teams. So there's a significant difference when you're losing maybe your third or fourth wide receiver, you're losing your third or fourth safety. That's one thing. It's another thing when you lose a number of starters, and that's exactly what the Giants did. You look at the 22 players, we're talking about impactful guys, and Giants.com even listed Victor Cruz, Prince Amukamara, John Beeson, Jeff Schwartz, Robert Ayers, Matthias Kiwanuka, Walter Thurman III. I listed about five or six guys, and those are guys that the Giants organization was expecting to depend on for multiple reps each and every week. And it happened progressively. It wasn't as if they lost one guy in 1 week, or they lost two or three guys, I should say, in 1 week. It was every other week it seemed to be a storyline. So, unfortunately, injury sometimes just factors in with respect to luck. Number four was building blocks, the fact that the draft class, we talk a great deal about Beckham, but let's not forget that this draft class overall really made a name for itself. You had six of the group's seven members contribute this season. Three became regular starters, Andre Williams, Odell Beckham, as well as Weston Richburg. Devon Kennard, who was a starter in some games due to the injury bug. All across the board, a number of players made a significant impact. And that puts the Giants in a very good position for 2015. And we fielded a lot of your calls throughout the course of this program. And, you know, it was a debate that went back and forth. A lot of people call and say, when you draft a player in the first three rounds, you expect him to come in year number one and make an impact. Well, you can't critique the draft class this year. Those guys came in, they made an impact. And all that means is you now move towards 2015, you're going to be that much stronger. You're going to bring in a new rookie class, but your 2014 class you could consider them even more than just being sophomores at this point because of all the starting experience they had. So, you know, that was certainly a big plus for the Giants across the board. And let's not also forget the 2013 class. You had a great deal of progress and strides made with respect to that group. Jonathan Hankins is probably the one guy that jumps off the page. He embraced his role as a starter with Linval Joseph moving on to the Vikings. Demontre Moore came in late when Matthias Kiwanuka got hurt, and you also saw injuries to some other players on the defensive line. And Justin Pugh, another season in which he was the starter. He did miss a few games via injury, but building some more continuity with respect to the offensive line. And number five was not necessarily a reflection of the team, but just from a historical standpoint, the 90th season, and Michael Strahan obviously was inducted into the Hall of Fame, and he did receive his ring at halftime of one of the games. So those were the five most notable storylines that Giants.com compiled. And if you haven't had an opportunity to take a look at it, there's a few pictures and videos as well as a summary of some of those notable storylines. So feel free to check that out at your leisure with respect to the offseason. A lot of good features that are on Giants.com throughout the offseason. And we should mention, you know, this show's going to be on daily, each and every day, as we start up at noon. So we'll be keeping a presence throughout the offseason. And Giants.com obviously does a nice job, all of our writers, in terms of compiling stories and so forth. So we have you covered here throughout the course of the offseason. We hope you'll continue to tune into the show, continue to interact with us on the phones at 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. You can also follow and interact with me directly at Lance Meadow, one word, last name, M-E-D-O-W. Speaking of that, let's head to the phone lines as we open up the conversation today, and we start things off with Nana in Georgia. Nana, what's happening?
Hi, how are you?
Doing well, Nana. How's everything with you?
I'm good, thank you. My first thing I want to talk about is how come the Giants didn't reach out to Dan Quinn?
Well, first of all, Nana, you know, the Giants, obviously, they don't publicize who they reach out to, who they have contact with. But big picture, with respect to Dan Quinn, the one thing you have to keep in mind, he's the defensive coordinator for the Seattle Seahawks. Now, the way NFL rules and regulations work, you can't talk to an assistant from a staff that is still in the playoffs. So any team who has interest in Dan Quinn, this goes beyond the Giants, they have to wait until the Seahawks are eliminated or win the Super Bowl before they can even come in contact with him. So let's say hypothetically, let's use your premise, Nana, and let's say the Giants were interested. Because of rules and regulations, they couldn't reach out to him one way or the other.
Yeah, I forgot about that. But because I'm tired of our defense being that soft defense. So I feel like whoever we need to bring in, we need to bring in aggressive, you know, defensive play caller. We need to get back to that. Remember when teams were scared to come into our stadium and play? I feel like we need to come back to that type of defensive, you know, unit. And to me, we haven't had that in a long time. So whoever we bring in, I feel like that's who we need to bring in. I know a lot of Giants fans are real excited about this whole bring Spagnuolo back, but I'm not really too big on, you know, going backwards, you know. To me, I feel like it's going backwards. Find somebody new from another team whose defensive, you know, unit is real good and aggressive. And, I mean, I'm not saying he's not aggressive, but I just think we should go another direction when it comes to that.
Well, I think that they're doing their due diligence, Nana, and appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in today. You've seen the rumors just like I have. Obviously, as I mentioned, the Giants publicly don't mention who they're talking with, but you've heard a lot of the names. Nana just mentioned Spags. Pepper Johnson's name has been thrown out, the Bills' defensive line coach, who obviously may not return to Buffalo because of the changes in the staff. They're introducing Rex Ryan today as their new head coach. There's been Dennis Allen's name has been thrown out. As I mentioned, this is all speculation and rumors, nothing official from the Giants. And some of those names have no connections to the Giants organization. And Spags obviously is a familiar name given the fact that he was with this staff and helped this team win a Super Bowl. So I think that they're going to explore all of their options, which they did if you go back to the offensive coordinator spot. They were looking at guys who had connections to the organization. At the same time, they were looking at some coaches that made an impact elsewhere. And that's what I think the process is going to continue to look like as they move on until they ultimately make a decision. As Nana pointed out, you know, in an ideal world, every team wants to be aggressive. Every team wants to lead the NFL in sacks. That's been a staple of the Giants' defense if you just go and look at the historical trends. When you think about the Giants, just the identity of this franchise, whether it be on offense or on defense, offense, ground and pound type of team. Now, not a team that's going to throw for 4,000 yards, 5,000 yards every season. It's a team that's going to win the battle in the trenches. Toughness, that's what you've always identified the Giants with respect to. Running the ball and then on the flip side, stopping the run, getting to the quarterback. With all of the greats that they've had in this organization who are very physical at the linebacker position, on the defensive line. And that's the goal no matter who comes in as defensive coordinator. They want to be able to do that consistently. And case in point, look at the 2014 campaign. You know, late in the season, the Giants got that pass rush going. And they were a different defense. They were much more aggressive. Now, is that because the play calling was more aggressive late in the season versus early in the season? We could sit here and speculate all we want. You know, I don't have the expertise to start to look through all the types of schemes that Perry Fuel was running. Everybody has their own particular observations. You know, sometimes sacks come in batches. I always say this. That's the nature of the beast. If you look at Justin Tuck from his numbers in 2013 and JPP's numbers from this past year, they actually followed similar paths. And I was looking over some of the numbers at the end of the season. I try to keep some charts during the course of the year. And real quickly, before we get back to the phone lines, because this was relevant to at least the point that Nana was bringing up with respect to, you know, that aggressive mentality. And like I said, it makes no difference who the defensive coordinator is. The goal is every defense strives to be aggressive. But once again, sacks is not necessarily the always indicator that you're an aggressive defense. Justin Tuck last season, 2013, he had 9.5 sacks in the last 6 games. He had 1.5 in the first 10 games. Then you bring up JPP's numbers this year. JPP, to draw this as a comparison, as I bring up my multiple charts here, so just bear with me in terms of the breakdown of JPP. And as you know from watching this season, obviously he picked things up a little bit late. 9 sacks in the last 5 games, 3.5 in the first 11. You look at Justin Tuck's numbers, you look at JPP, very similar. And even if you look at a number of other players who have a knack to get to the quarterback, it comes in bunches. J.J. Watt, obviously a lot of people are going to throw out. You know, he's in a unique department. But some of the great pass rushers, whether it be in 2014 or throughout the course of the history of this game, they'll go through a stretch where they'll have JPP-like numbers, 9 sacks in 5 games, and then things will quiet down. You know, a lot of it has to do with how much attention is the offensive line putting on the defensive line or paying close attention to that respective pass rusher. Let's head back to the phone lines, 201-939-4513. Well, we'll be getting to your tweets as well, so if you can't get to the phone line, feel free to send out a tweet. Let's go to Frankie in Virginia Beach. Frankie, what's happening?
Hey, how's it going there, John?
It's Lance, but it's all right. What's happening?
You pointed out earlier the glaring things that we've seen on the field this year with respect to the Giants. You know, I've been a Giants fan since 83, man. And the thing that I did that I think really needs to be addressed in this offseason is our O-line. It just didn't look like we were winning those battles in the trenches in regards to them. In all the games I watch, and I've got, you know, Sunday tickets, so I catch all the Giants games, you know, we weren't pushing the D-line back, man, in a lot of those games to where the running back would have a hole, you know what I mean? A lot of, especially running on first down or second down, you know, the defensive line a lot of times got penetration and either stopped, you know, Rashad Jennings or they stopped Andre Wood. So, I mean, I'm just in this perplexing. I know we picked up an O-lineman recently. I seen that on Giants.com the other day. I forgot his name, 6'7 guy, 324. He played left tackle. I'm just hoping when this draft comes around and I've looked at some of the draft boards, I haven't seen any top O-linemen in the first, you know, top 10, you know, like Mel Kiper's draft board or whatever. So I'm wondering, you know, is there somebody, are we looking at really addressing that situation? Because, I mean, you look at Dallas, man. I hate the Cowboys. I cannot stand the Cowboys. And I live in an area, unfortunately, where there's a lot of Cowboys fans, so I'm always joined with them. But I will give them respect in this, that they have improved that O-line. And no matter who they plug in back there, you know, I mean, they pounded Seattle, you know, early in the season, who I thought was going to beat them, you know. And I'm just saying we need to go that route because the Cowboys are beefing up, you know, and we need to be able to when we play them twice a year, we need to be able to dominate them in the trenches. And you know, so I'm looking at O-linemen in this draft and possibly some big rangy corners. I know I like Amakamura. I like, you know, some of them guys we got. But we need somebody that can check Dez Bryant real good because he makes plays, bro.
He does make plays. I mean? He's an extremely talented wide receiver, and the division has a lot of them.
Getting back to that aggressive style, whoever we pick as D coordinator, I mean, I'd love to have Spags back. I had some guys hit me up and say, hey, we're getting Spags back. I said, we don't know that yet. I said, but whoever, you know, the management, GM, Jerry Reese, and Tom Coughlin go with, I'm going to support. But, you know, we need to get somebody that knows how to scheme well. You know, I like Perry Few. He was all right. It's just that it seemed like he never made the right adjustments, you know, this season. So you pointed out early in the show the things that I noticed this year. When we played Seattle, we were beating them in the first half. But then, you know, as soon as they got beast mode rolling, you know, he was running over us. And it seemed like Jerry Reese didn't know what buttons to push or schemes to call to stop the rollouts of Russell Wilson or these different things, and it was the same old, we got steamrolled. You know,
and some of that really is the result of the miscues, so Frankie. Appreciate the phone call, Frankie.
How
thanks
are we
so much
improve
for
improving this offseason with the draft.
I hear you, Frankie, you know? And appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in. You know, if you look back at that game where they were running the read zone option and Seattle was running out with Russell Wilson, you know, some of it was miscues where players were out of position because they did make the necessary adjustments when they went up against the San Francisco 49ers the following week. So, you know, they did learn from their mistakes. And let's face it, most teams have had trouble with respect to the Seattle Seahawks this season just because of the versatility that Russell Wilson and Marshawn Lynch bring to the table. Very difficult to contain both of them. With respect to the draft and the direction that the Giants may go in, which is what the last caller brought up, and he brought up the Cowboys' offensive line. Now, keep in mind, the Cowboys' offensive line didn't build that thing up overnight. It took a number of years, Tyron Smith, then Travis Frederick, then Zach Martin this past draft. So it wasn't as if they all of a sudden flipped the switch. They brought in three young guys. Year after year, they directed their attention in that department, in that category. You look at the Giants, they didn't necessarily spend the first-round pick on an offensive lineman every single year, but you took Justin Pugh in 2013. You took Weston Richburg, who was a high second-round pick. So it's not as if the Giants haven't addressed the offensive line. It's just a matter of you got to give some of these young guys time to progress and time to click. I mean, Richburg played one rookie season. So after 1 year, you can't expect him to all of a sudden be Tyron Smith. You have to at least put things in perspective. Same thing with Justin Pugh. Everybody talks about him as if he's been in the league for 10 years. This is only year two that he just finished up, and he was hurt for a little part of this year. So, you know, let's see the progression with respect to these players. The jury is still out. A lot of people like to start to speculate and break down draft classes. I always say, how can you break down a draft class unless you give these players 4 years minimum in the league? Sometimes these players don't hit their prime or hit their stride until you get into year four, year five. The other thing to take into consideration, not so much with Richburg because he was a rookie, Justin Pugh has now had to learn two different offenses over the course of his 2 years. And with respect to the Cowboys' offensive line, they've changed things. But remember, before Scott Linehan took over play-calling duties, Bill Callahan, I mean, they have a different title for just about everybody over there. Jason Garrett and Callahan have been within the organization for a few years. Scott Linehan's the new guy, but it's not as if they all of a sudden revamped the entire offensive system. So it's a little bit different in terms of the transitional period for the Cowboys offensive linemen versus the Giants offensive linemen. I think that at least needs to be taken into consideration when you look at what the Cowboys have done versus what the Giants have done. I think the Giants have addressed the offensive line during the draft, but sometimes the expectations need to be kept in check, given the fact that these two players in particular, Pugh and Richburg, are still very young. And the maturation process sometimes takes maybe another year or two. That's why when you look at next year, I think next year is going to be a critical season because it'll be year two in this offensive system. They made strides in the latter part of the season. They're going to have another offseason under their belt. That should be a telling note as to how far this system has come along and how far some of the individuals have come along. Let's head back to the phone lines. We check in with Len in Maryland. Len, what's happening?
Hey, Lance, how you doing?
Doing well, Len. How about yourself?
Good, good, good. It's been a while since I got to talk to you.
Absolutely. Good to hear from you. So what do you got?
Yeah, good to talk to you. Happy New Year, Lance.
Same to you.
Well, you know, I wanted to go in a certain direction, and then, you know, I was kind of taken by some of the comments of the first couple of callers. You know, the first caller, Anna, had an awfully good point. You know, looking for somebody new. Yeah, we would have to admit, if it is Coach Spagnuolo who gets the defensive coordinator's job, that's kind of a unique situation. I don't know very many coaches that have gone back to a team.
Well, the Patriots have done it a lot. I didn't mean to interrupt you, Lennon. I'll let you continue. You look at the Patriots, Josh McDaniels returned to New England after he parted ways with the Denver Broncos. It is unique, I'll give you that, but I wouldn't say that would be the first time that it's ever happened. Guys have returned to their organizations.
Well, I wasn't suggesting it was the first. I was saying that it is somewhat unique.
I'll give you that, yeah.
You know, it's almost like, you know, you break up. Not that we broke up on bad terms, but, you know, you break up. It's hard to get back together again, Lance.
It is, but, I mean, listen, he got a promotion, though, Spags. So, I mean, they left fine. You can't blame a guy for wanting to be a head coach. I think that's everybody's goal at the end of the day.
You know, of the guys who, you know, of the names that have been floated out there, I like Spagnuolo for one particular reason, and that is, he's been in these stadiums in the NFC East. I'm a big NFC East guy, Lance. I mean, I would like that coordinator to have some experience in the NFC East, to understand the culture, the kind of football that's played in the NFC East. Understands the culture inside your building.
Well, listen, Len, you're the first guy. You're the first guy to say, hey, we don't prepare every year to beat the Jaguars in Tennessee. We prepare to beat the NFC. So I'm not surprised that you're throwing out this philosophy again. At least you're consistent.
I want a guy who's led a team into the vet, whatever they're calling it now, the link, led a guy into Dallas, understands the NFC East, understands the culture inside your business, and knows every diner along Route 3 in northern New Jersey. I mean, he just understands what it's all about, playing professional football, you know, in New York and representing the Giants, and I think Spagnuolo's got that. Plus, he's got a ring, you know. I mean, brings some credibility with him. Not that Pepper doesn't have rings, don't get me wrong, and he actually had two with us, I think. But
yeah,
I think that, you know, going towards Spagnuolo, I would be satisfied with that, and for kind of a little different reason. I like that NFC East mentality, Lance. You know, I'm looking at some ratings by Pro Football Focus, if I can have another minute.
Sure.
They did a study on the 21 free agents. I know it's commonly thought that, you know, we've got 22. What's the status on the tight end, Donnell? Is he an unrestricted, restricted? I know he's a free agent of some kind.
He is a free
is
agent.
One of those... Is he one of those guys who, you know, write a first refusal that we can extend a contract to him and he has to take it? I can't see him listed. I can't find anywhere that he's listed as an unrestricted free agent.
You know what? I'm looking it up myself as we speak. It's a great question, Len, and I do remember talking about this a few months ago, and I forget the exact facts. Yeah. I know that he's agent, but I'm not 100% sure if he has the opportunity where you can match a deal or he can go out and do whatever he feels.
Yeah, I mean, he hasn't been around very long. So
no, absolutely. Well, he was on the practice squad. So, I mean, he hasn't been on a regular season 53-man roster for a great deal of time. They list him, according to my chart here, as a restricted free agent.
Okay.
For actually, they list him as a restricted free agent for 2016. According to what I'm looking at, and I don't know how accurate this is. I'll try to get confirmation. He actually is on the payroll, according to the listing that I'm looking at, for this coming season. Now, I don't know if that's guaranteed money. I don't know if that's a team option, a player option. That's why I don't want to throw out the wrong intel. But what I'm looking at here has something on the books for 15 and has restricted free agent for 2016.
Well, that 15-1 may be that exclusive rights thing.
Correct. Can, that may be what it is.
You know, offer him something, and he has no choice. He has to take that if he wants to play pro football. And then in 16, he goes to a different category. Yeah, let me get back to this pro football focus thing. Not that it's the greatest thing in the world, and I know a lot of people are critical of it, and at times I am too. But they had an interesting list, 21 unrestricted free agents on the Giants, and they ranked them 1 through 21, 1 being the highest, 21 being the lowest, by score, right? What their season was like. Now, this is not position, you know, where they ranked amongst defensive ends. JPP was at the top. That doesn't mean he was the top-ranked defensive end. It simply means he was the top-ranked unrestricted free agents that the Giants had, given their the way they worked their point system. I want to get to the last six, Lance.
Yeah.
Working backwards, Jerry was 21, Rowe was 20, Patterson was 19, Shockey Brown was 18, Demps was 17, Bowman was 16. Five on the defensive side. All six of those guys came out of the end of the season healthy. They were not on IR. They didn't have an injury in the last game like Stevie Brown. The bottom six, Lance. Well, I mean, what do you do with those guys?
Name them again, Len, because you threw them out quick.
Unrestricted free agent, and I'm working backwards now. Jerry was 21. He was last.
Okay.
All right? The worst rated unrestricted free agent that we had. And I think if you look at it by position, he was like 68th as an offensive guard.
And who were the others again?
Well, Roll, he was 20th. I mean, Antrell, just, you know, if you follow Pro Football Focus, didn't have a very good season.
Hey, he was the first one to admit it was a rough season.
Patterson, Shockey Brown, Demps, Bowman. Do you bring any? Now, they're unrestricted. We can just let them all go. Do you bring guys like that back?
Zach Bowman has value because of special teams play. I thought he did a great job this season on special teams. And, you know, all of the guys that you listed, Len, you have to keep in mind, with maybe the exception of Antrell Roll, you know, it's not as if you got to break open the piggy bank to bring them back. So, if the Giants choose to bring them back, we're talking about guys that are going to build depth. It's not as if they're going to all of a sudden pencil them in as the starter. They're going to be brought in because they have familiarity with the system, and there will be some competition. So, that's what the Giants are going to have to evaluate.
They got to be able to play, Lance. They got to be able to play.
Well, Zach Bowman, as I mentioned, Zach Bowman wasn't a starter all season long, and he played plenty on special teams.
Right. Now, let me give some credit to the guys at the top of the list. JPP was one. Hynoski was two. Fells was three. The D-back Harris that they picked up toward the end of the season.
Mike Harris,
four. Mm-hmm. Was actually four. And a number of the 21 were guys who were on injured reserve during the season. And we got to make a decision on, like, Jernigan. You know, what do we do with Jernigan? What do we do with the lineman, Snyder? And then we got a bunch of guys in the last year of their contract. I mean, Mosley, Hosley, Kuhn, Herman.
Well, but keep in mind, those are all rookie contracts, Len. So, you know, once again, the financial strain that's putting on your cap is limited because they're on rookie deals.
Yeah. Relatively inexpensive. But I guess what I'm thinking here, you know, you go from 9-7 to 7-9 to 6-10. You start cleaning house. I mean, you say to the scouts, find the 10 best undrafted free agents out there, and let's open the pocketbook.
Well, and there's going to be another rookie class, too, coming in, Len. And listen, appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for chiming in today. It was good chatting with you. There's going to be a whole new group of young guys that are going to come in, and they're going to fight to take up part of the 53-man roster. So not every free agent's going to be brought back. There's turnover every single year. That's how the NFL works. And you look at the Giants from 2013 to 2014, there was turnover on the roster. So you can't expect them to be able to bring everybody back. They'll go through the evaluation period. That's exactly what the Giants do after the season. They grade every individual player. They grade all of the prospective free agents on the block. They're going to start to evaluate the rookie class, and there is going to be turnover. It wasn't as if the Giants didn't have depth on this roster this season. The problem is the depth even got hurt. Now, that was one of the biggest obstacles they had to deal with. And we could look at the ratings all you want and the rankings, but you know, starters went down, and then the backups to those starters went down. I mean, think about how many corners this team lost. They lost the slot. They lost the outside. They lost the backup to the slot. Walter Thurman goes down early in the season, and then Tremaine McBride, who remember was a starter in 2013, who they utilized everywhere. So you feel good, all right, Thurman's down, fine. You got McBride. That's why you kept him. He has experience. He has experience as a starter. He's played in the slot. McBride goes down. So now you're talking about bringing in Mike Harris, who Len mentioned. And Mike Harris did a great job when he came here, but you come in, you got to learn the system. It takes time. You know, a lot of the guys that they brought in, you don't just all of a sudden walk in and everything clicks. You need to adapt to the new terminology, the new system. So, you know, that needs to be taken into consideration. That's why I said the injuries made such an impact on this team because of the players that they lost, not necessarily the number. I mean, I could look at other teams, and I'm sure they lost 17, 18 guys, but show me the substance of those players that were lost. The Giants, they lost plenty of substance. That's what's important. Now, I was also trying to clarify while I was talking to Len, and I know a number of you sent in tweets, and I certainly appreciate that. With respect to Larry Donnell, he is an exclusive rights free agent. So all the Giants need to do is offer him that number that I had seen listed next to 2015, and as long as they offer him that number, he'll come back. It really isn't much of a competition between the Giants and the rest of the league. They are in the driver's seat. And all indications are that, assuming they're pleased with his play this season, and I know a lot of people are very pleased with what he was able to produce, some ball security issues, but remember, he's still very young in the game. He made quite an impact at the tight end position. And on this program, we were talking about this all season long. Everybody was throwing out JerMichael Finley and some other free agents that the Giants could have brought in or should have brought in. And they had somebody on the practice squad who was working very hard, had an opportunity, took full advantage of his playing time this year. So an exclusive rights free agent. That's what Larry Donnell is. And as long as the Giants offer him the contractual number, then he will be in prime position to return. So that's exactly where Larry Donnell stands with respect to his contract. Let's head back to the lines at 201-939-4513. So glad you could join us on Wednesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. Lance Meadow with you. Will is in the Bronx. Will, what's happening?
Hey, Lance. How are you today?
Doing well, Will. How's everything with you? What you got?
Good. Couple comments here. First off, I'm tired of hearing about Will Hill. Great player. He served us well, but he blew three different opportunities. So, you know, Giants Nation, please leave that issue alone and let's move on. Next man up.
No argument there. I mean, listen, we've talked about this on this program multiple times, and it was brought up at the time when he wound up signing with the Ravens, and he was very productive with Baltimore. But, you know, as you alluded to, the Giants worked very diligently with Will Hill and gave him many opportunities. And at the end of the day, you need to evaluate all of that to understand why the Giants made their decision.
Yeah, and it's understandable. You get three chances and it don't work out. God bless you somewhere else. The coordinator situation, Perry Few. Yeah, he had a whole bunch of injuries this year, this past season. And personally, I think he should at least got one more shot to get his philosophy going to help this team out, which I think would have been a pretty good decision. Do you think, Lance, that the decision really came from Mara or from the GM, or was that do you feel like that was more of a Tom Coughlin decision?
Well, when it comes to decisions like that, and I'm going based on what John Mara and Jerry Reese mentioned at the press conference, John Mara was asked the specific question that you just threw out, Will, and Mara said, when Tom Coughlin's been around the league for so long, I'll recommend changes and my thoughts, but at the end of the day, it's ultimately on Tom Coughlin. That's exactly what he said at the press conference, but that doesn't mean that there are not a number of people that get together within the front office and the coaching staff to determine what direction they want to go in. And it's the same thing with the draft. It's too simple to assume that one person ultimately makes a decision. If you look at franchises, how they operate across the NFL, every franchise does it differently, but what the Giants have been known for years is there are multiple minds within the process. There is the scouting department. There's the pro personnel department. There's the coaching staff. So, you know, at the end of the day, who did it fall on? I'm sure Tom Coughlin has a great deal of influence on who he wants to retain and who he wants to change on his staff, but to think that nobody else gave their opinion, I think would be misleading.
Yeah, because to me it seemed like Coughlin didn't want to really let him go. And, you know, I just think some of the other influences probably had a heavier hand in that decision.
Well, I mean, who had more influence than the other? That's pure speculation, Will. But I would say that everybody gets together at the end of the season and evaluates what transpired during the season, and everybody's voice is heard, whether they're a member of the front office or they're Tom Coughlin, who obviously is in charge of the coaching staff. But to say that Coughlin had more of a say than this guy, once again, that's pure speculation.
Yeah, it is. So I'm not going to go further with that. And lastly, Lance, this kid that we drafted last year, third-round pick, Bromley, I didn't see him really do anything last year, and I'm wondering if that was kind of like a wasted pick, because the Giants actually, he was supposed to be like a fourth-round pick, I believe.
Well, they had him ranked. I mean, the so-called experts, Will, what you're alluding to, you know, he wasn't necessarily penciled in. But once again, you know, every scout can look at a player and have a difference of opinion. Bromley did play throughout this season, Will. It wasn't as if he was just riding the bench. He was inactive a few times because of the depth chart, and you can't dress every defensive lineman. But later in the season, as guys got hurt, you know, he was involved in the game plan. And I mentioned this earlier, Will. You know, it's very difficult to evaluate draft classes after just 16 games. I understand that you want to see impact out of everybody, and in an ideal world, you'd love all seven guys to come in, start, and wow you. But, you know, let's see what Bromley does moving forward. They clearly have a plan in place for him, considering some other free agents on the defensive line, and I'm sure next season, depending on how the depth chart plays out, we're going to see more of a role and more of an opportunity for him to be productive. But for the limited amount of time that he was out there, he was able to take advantage of his opportunities. He did play.
Yeah, because I was just thinking about what happens if Sue is available and we bring Sue in. How does that affect that whole strategy now?
Well, you can never have too many guys on the defensive line. Keep that in mind, considering how the injuries have played out. And, you know, Sue, a lot of people have brought up his name. Once again, pure speculation. It all depends on, you know, how much money he is going to demand on the open market. From a financial standpoint, well, keep in mind, Jay Bromley's on a rookie deal. He's only going to be heading into year two, and Dominican Sue is going to demand a great deal of money as a free agent. So, you know, the Giants, whoever they want to bring in, whoever they want to retain, you know, finances dictates a lot. And even John Mara was asked about this because they were aggressive last season. If you put things in perspective based on other offseasons, they brought in a lot of name guys. They were aggressive. They went out, they filled holes through free agency. John Mara was asked, do they anticipate doing that again? And he said, it's highly unlikely that they're going to duplicate what they did last offseason. So if you read between the lines, would it be a surprise if they brought in Sue? It would be somewhat of a surprise, but, you know, things change week to week. That's how the game moves along. That's how the NFL landscape changes. But I would say Bromley is an attractive asset because he's only on a rookie deal.
I agree. Last thing, do you think we have more of a need on the D-line or on the defensive side going into the draft first two rounds? Or do we need more weapons for Eli or more protection? What's your take on that?
Well, I mean, I think a lot of the things you just hit on are all areas that the Giants would like to get stronger in, and we'll appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for chiming in. With respect to the greatest need, you know, you look at the defensive line, a lot is going to depend on how free agency plays out and whether or not they feel that they can utilize more depth. If you look at the defensive line right now, just looking at the players that are going to be returning, Ayers is under contract, so assuming he gets back to full health, you'll have him back. And before he got hurt, he certainly gave that pass rush a nice spark. Then you look at who else is on the defensive line. Bromley, I mentioned, is on that rookie contract. I'm just looking through the list of the entire roster, so bear with me here in terms of perhaps the necessities and the makeup of this roster. Looking at some of the other defensive linemen here. Cullen Jenkins is going to be a free agent in 2016, so he's still on the books for next season. Kiwanuka is on the books for this year. We'll see what happens with respect to his future. Marcus Kuhn is still on that rookie deal. He has another year left. So all of these guys that I'm listing, Demontre Moore, he's on the books. He was drafted in 2013. It's not as if they're going to have a great deal of turnover if you just look at contracts alone. I don't know what's going to happen in the months ahead. You know, guys could be cut. Things could change. Players can restructure deals. Right now on paper, they've got a number of guys under contract. So if you bring back most of those players, do you have a lot of wiggle room to throw in another defensive lineman? I don't know necessarily if that's the case. The offensive line, I think building depth in that department, given some of the injuries that took place and the desire to get that running game going a little bit more consistently, that would be probably one of the areas that the Giants are going to focus on this offseason. With respect to the last point that Will brought up about giving Eli Manning more weapons, if you look on paper, and once again, you hope everybody's healthy, you have Odell Beckham, you have Victor Cruz, Reuben Randle, who came along late, Larry Dinnell. I mean, those are four nice weapons to surround Eli Manning with. So I don't know if the necessity of bringing in, you know, another star-caliber player, plus Jennings and Andre Williams are both under contract. So, I mean, you're pretty much set with your personnel at running back and wide receiver. The goal would be, once again, rounding out the depth chart, bringing in some veterans if you don't re-sign some of the guys that are currently on the roster and adding some more youth. I mean, that would be the goal. The goal would be, you know, beef up the depth chart. So, you know, in the event somebody gets hurt, you feel good that you have other guys that can easily step in and have familiarity with the system. Let's try to squeeze in as many other callers as we can as we take you up till the top of the hour. Rolando is in Queens. Rolando, what's happening?
Hey, Lance, how are you?
I'm doing well. How about yourself?
Not bad, not bad. Pleasure to speak to you again.
Good chatting with you.
One of one of the subject matters, the one I want to speak of, is that when we started last year, they don't want to say rebuilding, but they're saying that we're retooling. And I said we were going to take 3 years to be able to retool the offensive line and the defensive line. And, of course, the offensive line because of age and the defensive line because of bad draft choices that we had. And I think we're in the midst of that now. We're in right in the middle in the second year that if you look around the totality of the team, if you pan out, we only need a left guard. If Schwartz comes back and plays to his ability, we only need a left guard. When you go to the right, when you go to the defense, you need a defensive tackle that can stop the run. And on paper, we say we have a middle linebacker and maybe McClain can go on the outside. We have no safeties, per se. So,
well, just to cut you off, Rolando, I'll let you continue. Safeties is a question mark because of free agency right now, given
right.
The fact
right.
that Antrell Roll is a free agent, Stevie Brown's a free agent. So that's why it's a necessity. I would agree with you. We don't know how the roster is going to change depending on who comes back.
Bro, I'm hearing you, and last night I was thinking, I think we spend roughly $13 million in the safety positions between Antrell Roe, Stevie Brown, and Demps. And I don't think we got $13 million worth in our return. I mean, that to me was a bad investment, and I think it's just time for us to, you know, move forward. Is Antrell Roe a great team player? Absolutely. Is he a leader? Absolutely. Is he great with the media? Absolutely. But how's his performance on the field? And he, just like you guys always say, and I'm echoing what you guys told me, is that he's on the other side of 30. That I think we're going to put that kind of investment, given that we're building a team. We're not building public relations. We're building a team. Moving forward, we cut ties with Antrell Roe. Go out and try to sign the kid from New England, safety from New England, Devin McCourty.
McCourty. Devin McCourty.
Ruckus, Rasheem Moore from Denver. There's a kid that we can't touch, but I will look into in terms of from Cleveland Browns, Craig Robinson. In terms of he's a restricted free agent, so he's 25 years old and he has a lot of upswing. And we only need one. And we're at a position now that John the other day mentioned something that he corrected my perception and made it a reality that made it hard for me to swallow. And that's Beeson is always hurt. We're hoping he comes back once again and play the middle. But the reality is, Beeson and Jennings, they are what they are, injury prone. And that being said, we're going to have to get the insurance policy of getting maybe a linebacker like Brandon Spikes or Mike Harris from the Jets, another running back to be able to complement Williams in case Jennings goes down once again. And I'm thinking future-wise, we're at a great position right now. Getting one or two free agents to be able to address the back end, and given the place where we're drafting, you're talking a potential you can go anywhere in the first round. You're talking Danny Shelton, Eddie Goldman, you're talking Jordan Phillips, you're talking Malcolm Brown. Those are all defensive linemen. In the second round, you're talking A.J. Kane from South Carolina, Trey Jackson from Florida State. These are guys that you probably could put in. Those are just the first two rounds. You could plug in an offensive and defensive line and still be building the team going forward. The thing I like to know, Lance, Bromley, is he more of a run stopper or a pass rusher?
I think he's a combination of both, to be honest with you. And Rolando, appreciate the phone call. Clearly, Rolando doing his homework, listing just about every draft prospect, I think, imaginable. So kudos to you gals and guys, and I know a lot of Giants fans do your homework and so forth, and you're already anticipating the draft. I think there's still some time to go. With respect to Bromley, it's a combination of both. He got to the quarterback at Syracuse, and he was also pretty good at stopping the run. In terms of how the Giants envision him, I think they're going to look to obviously want to get some pressure from the inside. You know, Jonathan Hankins has done a really nice job getting to the quarterback from that defensive tackle position. So the Giants like those defensive tackles, not just to stuff the holes and stuff the gaps. They want them to get to the QB, and I think Bromley has the versatility to do both. It's just a matter of him adapting to the system and showing progression, but I wouldn't necessarily categorize Jay Bromley and say, you know, once they insert him more and more into the lineup, he can only stop the run. You know, when we talk about DeMontre Moore, for example, everybody talks about he's got a knack to get to the quarterback. He's got to be more consistent in terms of stopping the run, whereas, you know, JPP's more of a balanced type of player. I wouldn't put Bromley into that DeMontre Moore type of category. Number one, he's still very young, but they envision utilizing him in both spots in terms of getting to the quarterback as well as stopping the run. With respect to speculation about free agency, and that's what Rolando was touching on, whether or not the Giants are in good shape or they've got to revamp the roster. As he mentioned, you know, there's a number of strong commodities on this team. John Beeson, who he alluded to, has been plagued by injuries during the course of his career. The positive is you have Jamil McClain, who can play the middle, can play the outside. So, you know, I'd say you'd have the insurance policy in place already. However, if McClain's got to move over to the middle, then you need to beef up the depth chart with respect to the outside. Jennings hasn't been a starter during the course of his career prior to what he did in 2013 with the Oakland Raiders, filling in for Darren McFadden, and then he comes here, and he was penciled in to be the starter. Unfortunately, he got hurt. Andre Williams got a great deal of experience this season. You still want some more compliments to him so that in the event one of the two gets hurt, you have somebody else that you can hang your hat on. So, depth chart, and that's what I had been talking about throughout the course of this program. It's not so much that they need to go out and make a splash or sign a guy to X amount of dollars. You just want to round out the roster, and I think that's the goal and that's the vision for the Giants this offseason, having quality depth at just about every position. The other thing I wanted to note with respect to the safety spot, the last caller was focusing on Stevie Brown and Antro Roll, who are obviously free agents. You do have some youth there. Now, they're young. Cooper Taylor has also dealt with some injuries, so I understand there's some question marks, and I'm sure a lot of people are going to send in tweets that they are question marks, and that's fine. Now, I'm not selling you on the fact that these guys have proven track records, but you have some young commodities that the Giants could certainly work with moving forward to at least help in the depth department. Taylor is one who had a very good offseason. Unfortunately, he got hurt during the course of training camp, and they had to put him on IR. And the other one is Nat Burhe, who was a key special teams player. Once again, started at the safety position, had some time there when they were moving Stevie Brown around. So, you know, those are two guys with a strong offseason under their belt. You know, they could add a lot in the depth department, or perhaps one of them or both of them could fight for a starting position. So don't overlook at least those two names when it comes into the conversation with respect to this offseason. So that's going to wrap things up for us here today on Wednesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. Certainly appreciate all the phone calls. I know a number of you have sent in tweets, and I do monitor them throughout the course of the program. I do appreciate a few of you writing in with respect to Larry Donnell, and I was able to look it up as well with him being an exclusive rights free agent. Actually, before I just close the door on the program, let me just see if I could throw out a tweet or two in case somebody had a question they wanted to throw out. I know a number of you had thrown out some questions. Nana, who called in earlier, I Bleed Blue 10, asking about Corey Washington, and I'm assuming that question is regarding the depth chart that we were getting into at the receiver position. Corey Washington made strides throughout the course of this season. You heard the coaching staff talk a lot throughout this year about, you know, they want to see a little bit more consistency on special teams, which is important for anyone who is that fourth or fifth wide receiver, corner, and so forth. He was a young guy that had a tremendous preseason, and he will certainly be in the conversation with respect to depth again this offseason if they keep him on the roster. He's going to be relevant in the conversation, but you also have to understand there's a lot of guys ahead of him. And as I mentioned, Victor Cruz coming back healthy, Beckham, Randall, you know, those three guys are going to stay on the field. You're not benching any of those three to put Corey Washington on the field. He adds depth, but I would not expect him to move past the rest of the notable names that have made such an impact throughout the course of this roster. Any other tweets that I did not address throughout the show, I will certainly try to do so off the air. Once again, we certainly appreciate the interaction on this program. Big Blue Kickoff Live with you each and every weekday at noon Eastern here on Giants.com. Stay locked to the team's website. As I mentioned, top five stories of 2014, one of our newest features. Certainly take a look at that when you get a chance, and we'll continue the conversation the rest of the week. Enjoy the rest of your Wednesday. We'll speak to you soon. Have a good one.
Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Jackson on the field. He's got through. 35, 30.